This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Friday feeling, baby. Here we go. Our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHE. My seventh hour on the radio. Thanks for being here today. Appreciate it very much. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Well, President spoke before the show today. And there you go. That's refreshing. Had a lot to say, particularly on Russia and on Ukraine. And the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria, VenariaDental.com. Look, there's a lot to smile about. Have you reached out yet for your free implant consultation? If not, why not? What are you waiting for? Do it today. Reach out to Dr. Mike Venaria, VenariaDental.com. My buddy, my friend, master of dental implants. So Trump talking about imposing these new tariffs on Russia, sanctions on Russia, to try to get a deal done. He's getting very frustrated with Ukraine, and that's a big part of what we're talking about right now, is his frustration.
I'm finding it more difficult, frankly, to deal with Ukraine, and they don't have the cards. They don't have the cards. As you know, we're meeting in Saudi Arabia on sometime next week early, and we're talking. I find that in terms of getting a final settlement, it may be easier dealing with Russia, which is surprising because they have all the cards. I mean, they're bombing the hell out of them right now. And I put a statement in, a very strong statement. Can't do that.
Mr. President,
we're trying to help them. And Ukraine has to get on the ball and get a job done.
Got to get the job done. Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing. We need peace here, right? We got to have peace. And peace is a good thing. It's what we want. It's what we all want. It's what we need. We need it. Give me some peace, baby. I think the market would help a lot if there's peace. I really do. I just think it's the way it has. It has to stop. And Mike Waltz said it best, too, I think.
The president has been crystal clear, and he's been clear to all sides. The fighting has to stop. Both sides need to get to the table. We had a good engagement. Both leaders have said only President Trump could do so, and only he has been able to do so. We had an initial engagement with the Russians. The Ukrainians had a great opportunity to bind our economies together through that mineral deal. Unfortunately, that didn't go so well, but we think we're going to get things back on track. Secretary Rubio, myself and Ukrainian delegation will be meeting in Saudi Arabia next week to get these talks back on track, get the ceasefire in place, and drive peace home under President Trump's leadership.
And that's what we got to help. And we want this. You know, this is what we want. We want peace. Peace. President also said today, you know what? Chip plants are coming back. Not the kind of bag of chips that I tore into before the show today, but actual chips.
We've already had five major automobile companies first time you've heard this in a long time, since my first term, actually, where we were really rocking and rolling, and then Biden came in and he stopped everything, like such a stupid thing to do, not even a believable thing. But we have many auto plants now coming in. We have big chip plants. We have the biggest chip company in the world, most powerful, probably one of the most powerful companies in the world. Wouldn't you say, Kevin? And he's coming in and they're building one of the largest chip plants in the world. That'll be done in Arizona, mostly in Arizona. And that'll give us a big percentage. That one plant will give us a big percentage of the chip market, something we have very little of. You know, we used to have Intel, and Intel was run by a man named Andy Grove. And Andy Grove was a tough, smart guy. I used to read about him when I was a young man, and he did an incredible job. He really dominated the chip business. And then he died, and I guess they had a series of people that didn't know what the hell they were doing, and we gradually lost the chip business, and now it's almost exclusively in Taiwan. They stole it from us. They took it from us. And I don't blame them. I give them credit. I blame the people that were sitting in this seat because they allowed it to happen. We could have protected that so easily. But so we had the chip business, and now it's all in Taiwan, almost exclusive, a little bit in South Korea, but mostly in Taiwan. And it's very important. Everything you do, everything you touch is now about chips.
Chips. We love chips. But I think that's the key, right? It's the key is the American manufacturing being back. And that's what we're talking about. And, you know, then it's the idea. Who was it? Mayorkas yesterday. Like, who's going to pick our crops? Who's going to put nails on the roof? Who's going to do these things? Huh? Who's going to do these things? Well, it turns out that if you deport illegal immigrants, turns out you actually find more people who do have jobs, despite the racist statements of the left. That illegal immigrants are the only ones who want to do these things. I just can't believe this. They get away with this stuff.
I think that the three things that you emphasized during the campaign is that you wanted to create domestic, high-paying manufacturing jobs, that you wanted to end wasteful government spending and reduce the unproductive government workers, and in fact, unleash them into the private economy where they could be more productive, and to create jobs for Americans. A lot of people said that if you deported illegals, the employment would go down because no Americans would take those jobs. And if you look, 280,000 American-born folks were hired. Manufacturing jobs are going up. And this is just out of the expectation of your future policies, really, sir. It's in April when your Reciprocal Trade Act is expected to happen. The tax cuts haven't passed yet. And so people are clearly expecting the golden age. And if you want to forecast the future numbers, everybody, just keep in mind that President Trump has already gotten us $1.7 trillion in commitments of new factories. And those haven't even happened yet. Those aren't even in the numbers. And so I expect this is going to be a glimpse of a golden age to come, sir.
Golden age to come would be nice, and it would be good if we have people who are actually not government employees working, which is also the key thing. And that's what I'm saying right now. Government jobs. There were a lot of government jobs created under the Biden administration. A lot of them.
Under the final 2 years of Biden, one in every four jobs created in America was a government job. That's a tremendous percentage. But under the first full month of President Trump, which we haven't even gotten started yet, an incredible 93% of all job gains were in the private sector. So that statistic just came out. Under the final two.
I mean, we just a lot of government jobs. I mean, stop. Enough already. Enough. Because it's not that I'm anti-government jobs. It's just that the government, like I said, we the people did not create a government for the purpose of employing people. That's not what we did. It's not what the goal of government is, not to be a gigantic employment agency. Yes. I know what I was going to say. If you saw the last episode of Paradise, let me know. I'm enjoying it, really. I love the show. I really did. I loved it. So if you have not had a chance yet to watch it on Hulu, I highly recommend it. I really do. I highly recommend it. I thought it was great. I loved the suspense of it. And I love shows that keep me guessing. And I love shows that have a presidential assassination aspect to it, which, you know, I mean, because in fiction, I like the fiction aspect of it. That's the key there, the fiction aspect. The other thing today is Linda McMahon, the secretary, was asked the question about, you know, do we need a Department of Education? Is this something we really, really need? And she's going to put herself out of a job. She's going to put herself out of a job, which I love. I think that's impressive, right? How many people take a job to put themselves out of that job? Well, that's what Linda McMahon's job is going to be, to put herself out of a job. She was on Fox News earlier.
Do you know for sure he's definitely going to abolish the Department of Education?
He's been very clear about that. I mean, he couldn't be any more clear when he said he wants me to put myself out of a job.
How did you feel about that?
But I think there is definitely a role for education to make sure that as we move education back to the states, that we are providing the tools for the governors, for the teachers, that we can provide them with research to show best practices. Because the president's goal really is to see our scores go up. You know, when 70% of our students cannot read with proficiency, that's just incredibly difficult to swallow. And he's just not going to accept it.
Especially when the schools are focused so much on other things like DEI and telling our children they can transition. I want my child to learn about math and science. Science and reading, because if you look at the stats, we're well below in all of these. And President Trump says we spend more money than any other country, yet we're one of the lowest.
Absolutely. And that's intolerable. So we really have to make sure that our teachers are focused on teaching basics. You know, let's get back to the science of reading. Let's teach it phonetically. We've seen great results in Louisiana, Mississippi, other states that have put programs in place. Their scores come up. They're
Iowa,
rising.
Indiana,
yes.
The president was talking about.
Yeah.
So if you give this money back to the states, how will you be able to determine what they're teaching, curriculum?
The Department of Education does not set curriculum.
What does the department do?
The department actually does a lot of research. We see a lot of programs. We make sure that funds are getting into the states that are by statute. But those can, you know, flow in different ways back to the states.
Do we need this department?
No.
No. No, that's the key. We don't need this department. I like that what she said. The answer is no, we don't need it. So, yeah, so I'm all in, and I admire her. I admire her for the fact of saying, yeah, you know what, put me out of a job. I'll do it. Get me out of this job, baby. I'm going to get rid of my own job. That's how confident I am what I'm doing is the right thing. No, we don't need the Department of Education. I just really like what she said that. No, we don't need the Department of Education. And the question, too, is this going to hurt teachers? Now, I actually have a theory on why this is good for teachers to get rid of the Department of Education. Let me explain. But first, this is what Linda McMahon said when she was asked the question.
Would it affect the teachers if there's no more Department of Education?
I don't know. Teachers would be there in the classrooms. They're hired locally. They are supervised on a local basis. The Department of Education doesn't have anything to do, you know, with hiring teachers. Mm-hmm. That's all done at a local level. Mm-hmm. And I think teachers should be, rewarded. Good teachers should be rewarded. And I think that teaching is one of the most noble professions in our country. I got my certificate to teach when I was in college, and then my career took a different path. But teaching is so noble, and there are so many excellent good teachers, and we want to encourage them and support them and stand in their corner.
Mm-hmm. Here's why this would increase teachers. All right. Let's say I opened up Richie's Genius Academy and I offered opportunities for teachers to teach. Right now, the problem is I can't do that because I would have to charge a lot of money for tuition. So the only people that could come there obviously already are very rich people. The goal of school choice is to give school choice for everybody, not just the super wealthy. So I opened up Richie's Academy of Genius, and the money follows the kid. So whatever it costs to educate a kid in wherever area, say it's $26,000. Let's use Philly as an example. And now that money comes to Richie's Academy of Genius. It follows the kid. Now, you would argue then that maybe then the teachers will get laid off, but then I have the ability now to hire teachers. Maybe I can even hire some of those teachers in the public schools. And if the public schools are not doing as well, then they have to get better. That's called competition. That's a good thing for everybody. And then maybe as a consequence, teachers' salaries, because the job becomes so much more in demand at different schools, classroom sizes go down, teacher salaries go up because Richie's Academy of Genius has to offer more money to get those teachers from the private school or from the public school. So then maybe more people decide to go into teaching. I mean, it's a novel idea. It's a novel idea. And that's the thing, why I think school choice is always a good idea. And I mean, my sister works in education. It's not, people who want school choice are not trying to be cruel. There are great teachers out there. There's a lot of bad teachers. There's a lot of bad ones. And the problem is that these teachers' unions, which the Democrat Party controls. They have super control over the Democrat Party. A lot of these unions protect bad teachers. And then, of course, they take money from the teachers. And then what they wind up doing with the money from the teachers that they take is they turn around and then they use it for political purposes. They have like slush funds. The New Jersey Education Association is a great example of that, spending millions and millions of dollars to help Democrats get elected. Democrats. That's what I'm talking about right there. That's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, what you want to do is you want to have a situation where you get as many good teachers as possible and let because the ultimate tyranny is the ultimate monopoly. There's a monopoly whenever you have, I mean, when there's tyranny, whenever there's a monopoly and you don't have a choice for people to make. So then, yeah, by all accounts, then that's what happens. That's how it occurs. So I'm telling you right now, this is the way to do it. This is the way to go. All right. Excellent. We got more to come on the show. But wait. What? I'm getting ahead of myself again. I wanted to make another suggestion of a movie. And that was, since we're talking about the potential for nuclear war with Russia, good time this weekend to go rewatch War Games. You know what I mean? War Games. How good is War Games as a movie with Matthew Broderick, Ali Sheedy? How good is that? It's so good. And I'll tell you something else too. What I love about War Games is it really goes to the sense of the idea that a mistake could be made. You know what I mean? A mistake could be made when you engage in battle with a nuclear company. Remember this one?
It's not a real voice. This box just interprets signals from the computer and turns them into sound.
Shall we play a game?
Yes.
Oh.
I think I missed them.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Love to. How about global thermonuclear war?
Wouldn't you prefer a good game of chess?
Later. Let's play global thermonuclear war.
Fine.
All right. Wow.
Global thermonuclear war.
I'll be the Russians.
Please list primary targets.
Who should we nuke first?
Let's see. How about Las Vegas?
Las Vegas. Great. What next? Seattle.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you remember the other problem is that when you've got a situation where you're dealing with nuclear countries, a lot of problems could happen. And that's what I don't want to have happen. And I'm really excited for Superman. I really am. I'm really excited for the new Superman movie. The official trailer. Yeah, I know. I'm just getting ready for it. I'm getting ready for it. I don't even know. See, when they post these things on social media, do we even know if it's real or if it's just a fugazi? Clark.
And hope starts with you.
Superman, a being with power beyond control. He needs to be stopped.
Remember when Superman tried to get rid of nuclear weapons in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace? That movie was a disaster. Oh, man. All right, let's talk about Nicole Wallace's ratings. They are a disaster, even worse than Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Really, really bad. We'll talk about that. More on the economy. So much more to come in our fourth and final hour on a Friday. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
It is Friday. Glad you are with us today on a Friday. A lot to get to. It's Rich Scioli from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. I appreciate you being here. And you can always tweet me at Rich Scioli, RICHZEOLI. Now, Democrats are divided on the party's messaging. This guy, Democrat Ro Khanna, was just pointing out that some guy actually chased him down at the airport. I was like, listen, I'm a Democrat, but I really am disturbed by your messaging, by the way you're handling all this. I really am. I'm very unhappy with you guys. We're hearing a lot of that from people. A lot of people who are turning around and saying, I'm ashamed at the behavior of the Democrat Party the other day. So, I mean, I guess the question becomes, how much oxygen do we give this, right? How much oxygen do we give this? And I think we give it a lot of oxygen, because the bottom line is that the more we expose this, the more there's a chance that we can get reasonable people who disagree and we can have reasonable policy discussions. Let me bring up another show that I love, because, you know, I keep referencing movies and television, but The West Wing is one of my favorites. And it obviously has a you know, a liberal bent to it, but it was a great show. It was a fantastic. The first four seasons really were great. Aaron Sorkin was behind it. Then he got busted with mushrooms at the airport, and then he left the show, and then it got stupid. It really did. It got dumb. But the first couple seasons of that show were amazing. But there's this great scene where Jed Bartlett, who is played by Martin Sheen, is the president, and he's talking to the guy who's going to be the Republican nominee. And they're talking, and he says, you know, let's have some great debates, you know, like Lincoln Douglas style debates. Let's really debate the issues and just go across the country and debate. And he has no interest in it. The character has no interest. And then there's a whole plot line where the Secret Service agent gets shot and killed. And then the Republican nominee says, crime, boy, I don't know. And Martin Sheen looks at him and says, crime, boy, I don't know. That's the moment where I decided to, if you're wondering in the future, that's the moment where I decided to kick your blank, you know, family show. I don't want to. The point is that I like the idea of bipartisanship. I like the idea of everybody fighting it out on issues. I think it's healthy. I really do. I think it's healthy. I think it's good to debate ideas. I think sometimes that's where you can come up with some really great ideas. And there was a time, for example, where Democrats were against the United States just unilaterally sending money to Ukraine. Bernie Sanders and a bunch of other Democrats signed this letter. And they all said, hey, we want to get out of this thing. We should end this thing. Let's have peace talks. Let's have peace talks and let's do this and let's get out. And then that letter disappeared. But if the Democrats had actually pushed that, you might have had Republicans at the time who came out with and said, yeah, we agree. Like, this should not be happening here. We don't want Russia to win. But at the same time, this is Europe. This is not our problem. And if we are going to get involved, then we need to figure out a strategy and a plan here. And we should be trying to lead ceasefire talks. But that letter disappeared. The Democrat Party was not allowed to have bipartisanship. The Democrat Party was not allowed to debate the issue. And that's the problem, is that there was even that guy the other night when they were talking about Ukraine and peace. And this one Democrat, he starts to clap and he looks around the room and he's like, what? No, I can't. Nope. And he stops clapping. He had a Ukraine lapel pin on. And when the president was talking about peace, he starts clapping. He looks around. He's like, nope. Don't clap. Nope. No clapping for peace. Okay. Now the president putting in new sanctions on Russia to try to move them towards peace, as he's being accused by the left of being pro-Putin. I can't figure this out. I mean, if he's a Putin puppet, he's the worst puppet in the history of puppets. Like, really, Putin should get his money back. For the 4 years Trump was president, Putin doesn't do anything with Ukraine. Nothing. You know, he doesn't do it. Crimea happens under Obama. And then, of course, the invasion of Ukraine happens under Joe Biden. Over the 4 years Trump's president, nothing happens. And so they go out there and they accuse him of being this pro-Putin puppet. He's trying to actually get peace to the table. I really like what Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said on this issue.
The press is interested in narratives. Our president is interested in peace. So we will get characterized one way or another. Oh, your stance is pro-Russia or it's all garbage. The president got elected to bring peace in this conflict. And he is working with both sides in a way that only President Trump can. Let's be clear. Only President Trump can, to bring them to the table to end the killing. And I can tell you from being behind the scenes, he is laser focused on making that happen. And we're closer today than we've ever been because of his leadership.
Good. I mean, that's great. I like that. That's a good thing. Let's have that peace. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. But you know what's funny, though, is that we live in a day and age in which this guy can't catch a break because Democrats get cheered on when they do and say things that are just anti-Trump. You know what I mean? That's the way it is. And I get that. That's politics. That's the nature of politics. If there was a Democrat in the White House, we'd be working to oppose that Democrat. I understand. I get it. I understand that. But the big thing that they're fighting for is protecting government jobs. Now, listen, I work in a tough industry. It's called radio. And there were a lot of layoffs yesterday in this industry of radio. I got a buddy of mine. He got laid off from his company recently, was able to find a new job. But it's tough out there. It's a tough time. But there are federal workers putting signs in their yards that say, "We stand with federal workers." How do I know they're federal workers? Because all the signs are showing up in D.C. Everybody who lives in there works for the federal government or in some way, shape or form, butters their bread with money that comes from the federal government. The bottom line is that we're trying now to get rid of these government jobs because the jobs that were created in the previous administration were government jobs. We the people did not start a revolution. We didn't kick out England because we wanted to create a government that would hire people. It wasn't like the founding fathers turned around and said, "You know what? We got a lot of unemployed people here in the colonies. So here's what we're going to do. Let's declare independence, throw the king out of here, and then create a government of the people, by the people, for the purposes of hiring the people." That's not why we did what we did in 1776. And the idea that we would be fighting to keep government jobs and not reducing government is so antithetical to why we had a revolution in the first place, which was to create a small, limited federal government. That's not why we did the revolution, but that was one of the outcomes of it, obviously, when the states decided to create the federal government for the purposes of various things, but mostly to secure the country, but not to run the place in the manner in which they do today, with unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats and over 400 different agencies in the executive branch alone. So, you know, again, to go back to my test, if I'm a guy working for a living, a gal working for a living, and I'm, you know, putting nails in a roof, or I'm working on an HVAC machine, I'm a cop, I'm a fireman, whatever, and I hear all these people who are going on and on about these bureaucrats, these government bureaucrats, I'm not shedding a tear for them. The Democrats literally started this, by the way, when they came out with defund the police. Last time I checked, cops are government employees. But the Democrats were all in on defunding the police. They were all in on getting rid of those government jobs. What's changed? Now they have signs in their yard that say save federal jobs. And the U.S. economy, the headline today, of course, is the U.S. economy added 151,000 jobs in February, fewer than expected. Fewer than expected. Kevin Hassett, who is the head of the White House National Economic Council, explained that on CNN.
The bottom line is that the Biden administration created a lot of jobs, and they tended to be government jobs. About 25% of the job creation was government jobs. And we actually, as President Trump intended, reduced government jobs by about 10,000, as you guys just mentioned. And then the other thing we're trying to do is increase manufacturing jobs. And manufacturing jobs, which you didn't mention, were up about 10,000, with about 9,000 of those being new jobs for auto workers, which, as you know, are very sticky and high paying jobs. And so I think it's a fantastic report. It's showing exactly what President Trump intends to do. He intends to reduce government spending, to get rid of wasteful government jobs, and to create manufacturing jobs. And that's what you see. Finally, there are a bunch of signs that the flu was going to have a big impact on this job report. And that's what I think the travel and leisure thing that you guys just mentioned came from, is that people were homesick and they weren't going out and going to hotels and so on. And so I expect that that's going to reverse in the next month. And it's another reason why I was positively surprised about this. The people who account for flu in the jobs data were saying this number was going to be maybe even about 100,000 lower than what we saw.
Is that so? You realize now that when you're creating jobs and those jobs are government jobs, that's a fugazi. It's not real. And what we have to do now is we have to cut the size of government. And so that's what has to happen. But you're going to see, I mean, really, I think what the truth of the matter is that you are going to see the economy begin to explode as regulations go away. Regulations cause so many of the problems in the economy. Ask people who have businesses. They'll tell you that. They'll tell you that it is a situation where regulations become the problem. And manufacturing jobs delayed by regulations, because a lot of these companies can't expand and hire more people for manufacturing because of regulations. I mean, the Biden job record was, in fact, government jobs. Here's more of Hassett.
The Biden job record, mindful of the fact that they revised it down a million jobs last year. Don't forget that a lot of the job creation was government workers. It was government workers. About a quarter of the job creation over the last few years was an increase in government workers. And if you take those out and then still have a strong jobs number, that's a great, great economic outcome.
Exactly right. That's a great economic outcome, except for the people that work in government. And look, I could, you know, you could feel sorry for them. You could say, I'm sorry that you lost your job, but maybe something better will come for them in life. But also, what about all the government workers that put people out of work with regulations and going after them and then kept people from getting jobs, or even they lost their jobs as a response to that fact, right? I mean, if you got EPA regulators who keep a company from being able to expand, and then they can't hire more people, or they have to lay off people, or the IRS is busting their chops, or the FTC is busting their chops, or whatever other government agency is busting their chops. Well, where's the empathy for those people who don't have jobs or lose their jobs as a consequence of that? Biden's policies.
I think one of the things that you see, if you look at it, is exactly the objectives of the Trump administration, and the fact that even though we got a lot of work to do, we got to pass the tax cuts and get the deregulation train rolling, is that we're going to be reducing government employment and reducing government spending and increasing manufacturing employment. And as you can see in the jobs report today, you're already seeing a pivot in that direction. That's a huge one. So last year, 111,000 manufacturing jobs were destroyed by the Biden administration policy. And in this month alone, in February, we got 10,000 manufacturing jobs and 9,000 auto jobs. And as you know, those auto jobs are, you know, here, they're going to be paid well, and they're here for a good long time. And that's really just sort of a down payment on the Trump policies that are going to skyrocket into a golden age as soon as we get the tax cuts passed.
If regulations are the problem, then get rid of the regulations. And then everybody wins. And then you have a situation, too, where you can turn around and you can say, we are now giving people jobs. And the beautiful, beautiful thing about that is that many of these people who work in government who lose their jobs because we're downsizing government will have opportunities in the private sector because we're unleashing the private sector by getting rid of government regulators and bureaucrats who are stopping the expansion in the private sector. And then everybody wins. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
But no, Nicole Wallace, remember the other night, when the president honored that young man with brain cancer, that 13-year-old, and then Nicole Wallace engaged in her bizarre suicide fantasy about, I hope he doesn't become a cop someday and deal with the January 6th protesters and take his own life. And I mean, it was bizarre. It was creepy. It was weird. It was very dystopian. Well, as a consequence of that, her ratings have plunged. I'm not surprised. First of all, I don't even know how good her ratings were. That's the question. The real question you got to ask yourself is, when you say plunge, you're talking about going from hundreds to dozens? Because that's really the question that I have. When you say there's a ratings plunge, how many people were listening to Nicole Wallace or watching her show in the first place? But that's okay. Let's go with this, right? Let's go with this idea. Nicole Wallace had, say, dozens of listeners and now has dozens less because of what she said. According to Fox News, the MSNBC host generated headlines this week, widely criticized comments about 13-year-old cancer survivor featured in President Trump's address to a joint session of Congress, has seen her ratings suffer since Democrats lost power. Her program, Deadline White House, averaged 1.6 million total viewers from the start of the 2024 until Election Day. Then, saw a dramatic 35% drop once Trump prevailed. Deadline White House averaged just over 1 million viewers for the remainder of 2024 as its liberal audience largely tuned out the news on the heels of Trump's victory. Deadline White House saw a similar decline in the advertiser-coveted demographic of adults aged 25-54, averaging 144,000 demo viewers in 2024 before the election. That's not good. That number is not good. It sounds like a lot, but it's not good for a national cable news show. But now they're shedding that number 35% to settle for an average demo audience of 93,000 in the key demo that the advertisers want, that coveted 25-54 demo, after the loss for Democrats. But it's getting even worse. In 2025, Nicole Wallace's program on MSNBC has averaged 1.1 million viewers for a 25% decline compared to the same time period in 2024. Fox News Channel programming, so let's do an apples to apples comparison here. Fox News Channel programming that airs during her 4 to 6 p.m. time slot has averaged 3.6 million viewers this year, more than triple the viewership of Deadline White House. Now, that's a key time right there, that 4 to 6 p.m. So at 4 p.m., I'm on the air, obviously, 3 to 7. So I hope, you know, if you're interested in watching Fox News during that time, DVR it, of course, and watch it later. And as long as you watch it within 24 hours, it counts towards the ratings, I believe. So at 4 o'clock, you got Will Kane on, who does a great job. And then at 5 o'clock, you have The Five, which is probably the gold standard on Fox News for shows in terms of ratings. That and Fox News Saturday Night with Jimmy Fallon. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a frequent guest on the show, but he's also crushing it in the Saturday Night ratings. So is Lara Trump on Saturday nights. But if you look at that contrast right there between MSNBC and Fox News, so 1.1 million viewers for the 4 to 6 p.m. time slot versus Fox News, 3.6 million viewers, what does that say to you? What does that tell you right there? A couple thoughts on this. I don't think it's just people that want to hear just right-wing red meat, because that's not what they do in the 4 to 6 p.m. time slot, particularly on The 5. On The 5, you hear Democrat voices. Like Harold Ford, for example. I mean, he's on there a lot. And what's her name? The other woman who's on The 5, whose name escapes me right now, Jessica something or other. They're Dems. They're lefties. They're on the show. They have a good dialogue back and forth. They keep it cordial and friendly. It really never gets toxic. It's a good show. It's fun. It's good. It's fun to watch after my radio show, obviously. Or you can watch it with the subtitles while you're listening to me. That's fine, too. But the point is, it's not just five people who are sitting there who are all just saying the same thing. You have disagreement. You tune into MSNBC, you get anger. You get anger and outrage for two solid hours in that 4 to 6 p.m. demo with Nicole Wallace. And frankly, I think people are sick of it. Look, I try to do a radio show that's not pounding the desk and yelling and screaming and angry. I just think people are tired of it. And also, too, what are we pounding the desk and angry about anyway? We won. We won. So, I mean, from my perspective, I've never been happier. I'm smiling. I'm feeling great about things. I'm happy. But boy, is it a dark time over at MSNBC, is it not? Oofa. Now, back in the first Trump term, they actually had great ratings. And you know the reason why? I'll tell you, because every day they gave false hope to people. Today's the day. Like crazy Lawrence O'Donnell, Larry O'Donnell, stop the hammering, that guy. He would give false hope every day. Today's the day Trump's going to get arrested, hauled off, executed, worse than Watergate. Rachel Maddow would come on every night, tell people the same thing. Like today's the day. We're finally going to expose him as the Russian puppet that he is. So people would tune in, and was false hope. They didn't get any of that. And so what happened? Trump loses in 2020, and I'm putting that in air quotes. Joe Biden becomes president. Their ratings plunge because MSNBC stopped being their place for therapy. Trump's back in the White House now, so you would imagine their ratings would soar. But the problem is, when you keep selling people a bad bill of goods, and you can't deliver on that promise. Like, if every day I came on the air and I was like, listen, I promise you, today's the day. If during Biden's administration, every day I came on the radio, I was like, today's the day. Biden is going to be removed from office with the 25th Amendment. This is 25th Amendment bad. And they said that during the Trump years, remember? Well, is this 25th Amendment bad? And then you can't fulfill that. And people stop tuning in. They go, this person's full of it. But since Nicole Wallace had her weird suicide fantasy about that 13-year-old little boy who every single day is a gift for him and his family, her ratings have plunged even further. In the key demo, Wallace has averaged 108,000 viewers this year, trailing cable offerings such as Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives on the Food Network and BET's Tyler Perry's Sisters. Now, I have to confess, I've never seen Tyler Perry's Sisters, but I'm gonna wind up, you know, checking that out. Sounds great. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I think that's Guy Fieri's show, if I'm not mistaken. People love that stuff, but it's the Food Network's beating MSNBC. The freaking Food Network. So that's a problem right there. Because it used to be Fox News and MSNBC at the top. The two of them together were the top. And sometimes they would alternate. Sometimes MSNBC would actually beat Fox News in Trump's first term because of the false promises that today's the day he's going to be arrested, removed, sent to Gitmo. And they never delivered. Because none of what they were saying was true. And people want truth and honesty, and they're tired of the anger and the vitriol and the bitterness, and they're sick of it. That's why I hope you like me. I don't know. If you don't, I mean, I guess, I don't know, you're probably an angry person. One of the most memorable moments from Trump's address on Tuesday, of course, he puts a spotlight on DJ Daniel. Tonight, DJ, we're going to make you a Secret Service agent. Then Wallace goes on MSNBC, I don't want to play it because it's so disturbing to listen to, but I played it the other day and you've heard it by now a million times, you know, saying, I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer, but I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the six who loses his life to suicide. You're like, lady, this is a 13-year-old kid. Why do you have to say that? And, you know, the president even said the other day, she should be forced to resign. Frankly, what Nicole Wallace said, I've never been a fan of hers, and she's not very talented, but I will tell you what she said the other day about the young man is disgraceful. Wallace has been heavily scolded on social media and generated a plethora of negative headlines. A plethora? Do you even know what a plethora is? Name that movie, Three Amigos. Negative headlines from the New York Post, Newsweek, The Wrap, Daily Mail, and the Baltimore Sun were among the outlets to put a spotlight on backlash over her linking Daniel to January 6th and the suicide of Capitol Police officers. I mean, it's sick stuff. It's just like people don't want to tune into that negativity. And Rachel Maddow does one day a week on MSNBC. Her ratings have plunged. The whole network's plunged. CNN, of course, is trying now to be the network in the middle. And they've got, what's his name on there? Scott Jennings, who does a really good job of fighting and pushing back on CNN. They also have Harry Enten on. Harry Enten is the pollster. He's the Steve Kornacki of CNN. Enthusiastic and always excited. He just doesn't wear khakis like Steve Kornacki does. I don't blame him. I'm not a khakis guy. I really am not a khakis guy. I'm not a fan. You know what I mean? Jeans. Not khakis. I don't know why. I think it goes back to Blockbuster Video. Do you remember Blockbuster Video back in the day when you'd go in and everybody there was wearing khakis and a blue shirt? So every time I wear khakis and a blue shirt, I always feel like I'm about to go tell somebody that they owe me $1 in late fines or $3 in late fines, whatever it was, whatever the late fines were. I always feel like I'm about to tell somebody that. Like, hey.
70%, you know, if our students cannot read with proficiency. I mean, that's just incredibly difficult to swallow, and he's just not going to accept it.
Especially when the schools are focused so much on other things like DEI and telling our children they can transition. I want my child to learn about math and science and reading, because if you look at the stats, we're well below in all of these. And President Trump says we spend more money than any other.
Let's think about that for a moment, shall we? Let's think about that. All right, so the federal government's there to exist there now to turn around and to say we're gonna do things like tell children that when they want to go to school and identify as a different gender, we're not gonna let the parents know about it. We're not gonna let the parents know. We're gonna keep the parents in the dark. I mean, that's crazy, is it not? Just think about it. Like, my state of New Jersey has that situation too. Johnny goes to school and Johnny identifies as Susie, and the school doesn't let the parents know. What? Like, let me know what's going on with my kid's life. I want to know what's happening in my kid's world. I need to know what's happening in my kid's world because I'm the parent. I'm in charge here.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.